you in the name of Jesus again this afternoon. Parents making the faith attractive. We sang the song, Lord Give Us Christian Homes, and the song then did not give me this feeling, but I hope we don't have the feeling we can just sit back and, okay, God, I'm ready for it, and wait for him. I think our children's lesson brings out very well the fact that, no, I need to be engaged. I need to be engaged, and I need to be willing to engage with others in that process. Very important. In a few moments, I'm going to give you opportunity to share ways that either you or your parent used, something that comes to mind, that either you have intentionally done or that your parent intentionally did to make the faith attractive for the child. I'd like your input if you have something. To make the faith attractive. Attractive means to draw. To draw or to cause to approach. What does it take to draw our child, to draw our children to the faith we have as parents? What does it take? We're all familiar with magnets. They draw each other. They stick to each other. A couple of summers ago, I finally went and bought some yellow jacket traps. In the summer, they can really, really be a nuisance on the deck as you eat a meal or you try to put up corn or pears or something, and they can just really be a nuisance. So I finally went and got a trap, and it's a pretty little container, bright, but with that they send an attractant, a scent that you put in that trap, and it attracts these insects. Hopefully benefits you. Several years ago, I went and bought a bouquet of roses for my wife. Went down to the local florist, and I walked out of there not at all impressed with her arrangement. It did not attract me. So I took it home and I rearranged it. I think I did a little better. A bouquet of flowers is supposed to attract you. A beautiful bouquet attracts me. I love flowers. It draws me to them. I want to smell them. I want to see them. It looks beautiful. What do we as parents, what can we as parents do to make the faith, our walk with God, to make that attractive, something that our children are eagerly watching and looking at and they want to draw close to? How do we do that? As As I consider this title and where to go in Scripture as a leading off place, my mind went to the story of Abraham and Isaac and the account of God's command to Abraham to offer his son Isaac. It's Old Testament, but I seems to me there's some parallels there that fit very well for us today. Also, I thought about indoctrination. The concept, the practice of indoctrination has been used for many years. And it often comes to us as a negative. You know, they did that in Russia and Germany and but indoctrination is not a bad thing, does not have to be a bad thing. Think about it. Why do we invest money, and a lot of money, in our Christian day schools? No, we have other options. We've got cheaper options. Why do we invest in our own Christian day schools? Why do we, as a plain people, insist on whole family worship? Now, this concept is a little strange for people that may come in from that aren't used to that. Why do you not have a daycare in the back here for the younger ones? You would not expect them to sit through a sermon, would you? Why do we? Why do we as a plain people discourage college education? Why do we discourage that? Why does the homeschooling movement continue to grow in this Christian nation? Listen to this. Elizabeth Barthollet, a professor at Harvard Law School, says, "Many homeschooling parents are extreme ideologues committed to raising their children within their belief systems, isolated from any societal influence." Martha Albertson Feynman from Emory Law School called for a ban of all private education to ensure that all of America's children are raised according to her progressive worldview. Catherine Ross from George Washington University Law School argues that the law should not tolerate homeschoolers because homeschoolers are intolerant. What are we talking about? What are we looking at? Now, these are women, and it's broader than that, but these folks understand that, and they're speaking to the law, they're speaking to the homeschool segment, but I don't think they'd look at Christians a whole lot different. There's just a few things that homeschoolers and Christians have in common. These folks out there understand that there's some indoctrination going on. There are some parents here who are concerned about their children and are doing something about it. I would say I'm all for indoctrination, the right kind. We're all familiar with the quip, more is caught than taught. We understand that dad can't just say, "Now, Johnny, I want you to be a Christian. I want you to follow the faith," and leave it at that. Yes, we need to speak it. But we must do more than that. I believe that's what our title is driving at. We do teach. We put a high price on good, solid Bible teaching. We invest a lot of money in our Christian day schools, our winter Bible schools, our teacher training institutes. We're concerned about this. We don't believe that there's anything that can take the place of good, solid, consistent Bible teaching. At the same time, I don't want to give you the impression that you can just sit here in these pews and, well, they get it in school, they get it in church. I hope they get it. No, that won't be enough. At least, that has not worked well on the west side of the Rockies. It doesn't work well. I believe we could say that the teaching is the foundation. We must start there. We must build from that. But we understand that we finally need to go outside the classroom. We start in the classroom, but we need to get out. We need to get out into real life, and we need to live it. We need to finally put to practice those things that we learned. This afternoon, we're talking about the faith. The faith. Is it my faith? Is it our faith? I believe that it must be your faith. It must be my faith if our children will be drawn to the faith. We can't leave it up to someone else. I'm going to open it up now. Anything come to your mind that you would like to share in relation to what you have done or what your parent did for you to make the faith attractive? Anyone care to share?
Getting some friends, freshmen in high school, morning.
Thank you. We can rest assured that God is even more interested in our children than we are. Anyone else? All right, well, we'll move on. I'd like to take you to Genesis 22. And read this account of Abraham and Isaac. Genesis 22, verses 1 to 14. And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham. Now, tempt here isn't used quite as we are used to using it. God was not trying to get Job to fail as Satan comes to us, but rather it'd be all right to put the word test in there. God was interested in putting a test in front of Abraham to see how he would respond. That God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham, and he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thy only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thou into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains, which I will tell thee of. And Abraham arose early in the morning, and saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went unto the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said unto his young men, Abide ye here with the ass, and I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and come again to you. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering, and laid it upon Isaac his son, and he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, My father. And he said, Here am I, my son. And he said, Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, My son, God will provide himself a lamb for the burnt offering. So they went both of them together. And they came to the place which God had told him of, and Abraham built an altar there, laid the wood in order, and bound Isaac his son, and laid him upon the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called unto him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him, for now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, In the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. I've chosen five phrases out of this passage for my 5 points. Number one, Take now thy son, in verse 2. It is very hard for me to try to walk alongside Abraham through this time of his life, and to try to understand the ups and downs of the emotions of Abraham and Sarah during these years of walking with God. I can only assume that they were humans like us. I don't read anywhere that God made them superhuman somehow to handle these very stretching circumstances in their lives. Abraham and Sarah knew what it was like to receive word from God. It happened repeatedly. God gave them direction, direct direction. God spoke to them. What God wanted of them. And they had made a commitment as husband and wife to walk in it. When God says it, we're going to do this. On top of that, God had promised that Abraham and Sarah would have descendants, that they would have a big family. Not just a big family, a huge family. God had promised that. And time would go by and God would renew his promise. Your descendants will be innumerable, Abraham, because I'm God. Time would go by. God would come back and reaffirm his promise. And we come, well, it's history already from the passage we read. We come to Abraham being 99 years old and Sarah being 100 years old. Sorry, to be entirely accurate, about a year before that. God comes to them again and says, Abraham, here's my promise to you. And God finally says, you know what? They've been waiting 25 years. Of promise after promise after promise. Not promise after promise. Renewing the promise after renewing the promise. This is going to happen. 25 years. Finally, God comes to them again and says, at the right time, Sarah's going to have a son. And Isaac is born. When Abraham's 99 and Sarah's 100. But they lived for years wondering, okay, God, when is this going to happen? When's this promise going to come about? They were getting older and older and older. They'd come to the place where it's too late. God missed it. It's not possible anymore. But God fulfilled his promise through them. And so Isaac is born, the promised son, the pride and joy of old Abraham. I can only imagine that it made a young man out of Abraham. His pride and joy. I believe Abraham loved to get on the floor, on the ground with Isaac, and play with him. The writer of Hebrews in chapter 11, there at the beginning of the chapter, it lists the early heroes of faith. And then about verse 11, 12, 13, it says, all these died in faith, not having received the promises. They embraced the promise. They got promise from God. They embraced the promise. They lived the promise, but they never realized it. They never realized it. God took Abraham here. Now, Abraham is listed as one of those, but then it goes on with Abraham, and God takes Abraham farther yet To Abraham specifically, God gives him the promise of a son. And though Abraham thought God had missed it, he still had faith that God would come through somehow, because he carried on. And finally, he saw the promise, this promise of 25 years, finally was laid in their arms. Abraham saw it. What did that do to the faith of Abraham? I have a feeling it just made it that much deeper, that much stronger in the heart of Abraham. Then we come to our passage today, where God says to Abraham, he comes again with some direct information and says, Abraham, now take your son, your only son, and go offer him as a sacrifice. God has every one of us on a journey of faith. I trust every one of you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And that is a walk of faith. And in that walk of faith, we move on. And the goal is, God's desire is that we, that our faith gets deepened and strengthened as we go. And he tests it a little here, a little there. And he wants us to grow. And as we step out and begin our homes, that's another chapter of faith. It's a new chapter. And if God blesses your marriage with children, yes, God is continuing the human race, but it's more than that. He's given you those children to direct them, lead them into faith. He intends for us as parents to walk with them. He says now, take now thy son, take now thy daughter, take now thy children, walk with them, live before them, illustrate before them your faith in God. Take the responsibility of living your faith in front of your children. Our lives ought to be an open book to our children. They already see more than we think they do. Just let them have it. Let them watch. Let them understand your walk with God. Because after all, you want that faith to live on. I'm going to die, but I want my faith to live on through my children. I don't live life in front of your children. That's your responsibility. But I live life in front of my children. And if God does not bless us with children, there are many opportunities God gives us to live our faith and to increase the faith and grow the faith in others. Number two. In verses 6 and 8, it says, and they went, both of them, together. This follows number 1 very closely. In this point, we see that Abraham's, in this account, we see that Abraham's test of faith very closely involved his son Isaac. Not always does our test of faith involve our children so directly. Not always. Sometimes it does. God uses many different things to test and to strengthen our faith. There are times that God does touch our children and ask for us to release them. And I believe God intends to do that, not only with our children, but with everything in my grasp. Didn't we already consider that everything I call mine is God's, actually? How do I act about it? How do I act with it? I have found God working in my life, picking and choosing things in my life to get my release from them. God wants that. He wants our children too. God has given us our children to take with us, to go with us, to walk with us. But they're not ours. They're His. No matter what God uses, no matter what He brings into our lives to increase our faith, He expects us to walk together with our children. So, share with them. Share with them what God is doing in your life. Share with them what God is asking of you. What God is touching in your life to test, to increase your faith. Let them walk with you in that. Let them be aware of what's going on. Let them see your faith at work. It's okay if my faith is small. Or if it's weak, I can tell them that too. But let them see it at work. Dad, mom and dad are responding to God. God is speaking to them in this. They are responding. Let them see that. They need to see my willingness to take God at His word. When God speaks to me, I need to move. Let them be a part of that scene. They need to see my obedience when I don't understand and when I don't know what the answer is. They need to see my faith at work, my commitment to God. Walk with them. When we ordain someone to the ministry, we encourage them to take your family with you. Don't allow your ministry to be this box in your life that has to be done, but that just strains at the family. God gave us our families. God is in that. And if you look at the qualifications for an ordained person, it's one who has his house in order. I believe God holds that high. And so when called to the ministry, don't put them in the back porch. Take them with you. Yes, that's a challenge. I understand. Your ministry, understand, that's a challenge. Walk with your children. No matter where I find myself in the spectrum of life, responsibility, no matter how heavy it is, I believe we must walk with our children, walk the faith. And maybe my way looks a little different from your way. I think that's all right. What works for me may not work for you and your home. That may look a little different. But be sensitive to God. Follow God. And walk your faith with your children. Number three. We find in verse 8, my son, God will provide. We have here Abraham walking toward Mount Moriah. And I believe he was walking with purpose. I don't think he was just aimlessly heading out and maybe someday we'll get there. I believe Abraham was walking with purpose. Because it says next morning he was up and down the road. We don't read of hesitation on the part of Abraham. And as they go, we have Isaac asking this very obvious but very blunt question. Dad, we're going to do sacrifice. That's not a new thing. Here's the fire. Here's the wood. But where's the lamb? Dad, what do you say? Where's the lamb? I don't believe Abraham had any better idea than Isaac did as to what the outcome was going to be. Well, I'm talking the actual outcome. Abraham had a purpose because God had called him. He was going to give his son, his only son, he was going to give him in sacrifice. And so he says, well, son, God has a plan. God called, God has a plan, God's going to take care of it. We're just going to follow his plan. I believe if we are intently walking with God, that we will have ample opportunity to demonstrate our faith before our children. We will have those times come up. And it doesn't mean that when the time comes, I feel like this great teacher, this great possessor of faith that I can display before my children. Maybe I feel like a dumb little learner, but I think that's all right. For children to understand that dad's learning. That's what faith is. Back in Hebrews again, it says that he that comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. He must believe that God is, and that God is a God who will respond. It's believing that there is a God who's alive. That this God of heaven and earth who is alive also knows about me. He cares about me. He loves me. And he wants me to be in communion with him. He's thinking of me. He's working for me. He's planning for me. When I set my heart on him, I love him and I listen for his direction with a heart that is committed to do what God says. That God has my good in mind. And if need be, and if God wills, he'll make the sun stand still for me. He'll dry up the Jordan River for me. Or he will cause my car to drive down the freeway for many miles on an empty tank of gas. That actually happened in the state of Washington. It wasn't my experience. God, we must believe that God is. That he is, that he is alive. And we must believe that that God cares about us and that he will do anything for us. He will respond. That is the God we serve, children. That is why I follow him. That is why I want to do what he says. God will provide. Number four. We find in verse 9, and Abraham bound Isaac, his son. I can only imagine the heart-wrenching emotion within Abraham as he comes to the mount, as the time approaches for him to take his son. This promise, this 25-year promise of God. Don't believe Abraham hesitated. He obediently stepped forward. Every time I read this account, I just marvel at Isaac and his acceptance of his father's will. We don't read that there was any struggle between father and son. Josephus says that Isaac was 25 years old at this time, not just a little boy. And that Isaac was pleased to play his part in his father's devotion to God. I don't read any different. Is that the case? I don't know. But he was willing. And this tells me that somehow, somewhere, during the life of Isaac, that father and son had walked together. Something had developed between Abraham and Isaac that brought us to this point. Because I don't know if I'd call this natural. I believe something had been at work. Abraham being that something, God being that something in Abraham, connecting with his son, walking with his son, teaching his son, training his son, passing on the faith to his son. That was all happening day after day after day in the life of this boy, this only son. I believe we can say that because it says of Abraham there in Genesis, "For I know him," God says, "that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment." What a testimony.
What a testimony. I know Abraham, God says. I have seen a pattern here. I've been a part of his walk of faith. And I know where he's headed. I know where he's headed, God says, because of where he's been. And that he is going to pass this on to his house. Our children need to see our obedience, even when it's heart-wrenching. Even when it's difficult, our children need to see us step out in faith. The water's not parted yet. Just step out in faith. I believe our children need to see us be real. We're not going to just act like it and pull the wool over their eyes. They're going to see it. We're going to have to be real with them. And I don't believe it's weakness for them to see our humanity. They already know it's there. To see me struggle. Because Dad struggles at times. God's call has not always been easy. I believe it speaks to our children if they see mom and dad stepping out in obedience to God in their weakness, in their uncertainty. Children, we don't know what the provision is. We don't know what the answer is here. But God has said, and we will do. We serve a God of miracles, but it doesn't mean he's going to spectacularly deliver us from pain and suffering here. But God will come through. God will provide. Job is a good example that life isn't all roses by God's intent. Number 5, we find in verse 13, behold, a ram caught in a thicket. There was Abraham, knife in hand, hand raised. He was ready to do it. And God calls to him, Abraham. I can't imagine what went through Abraham's mind. He had come to the place of actually slaying his only promised son. And God stops him. What God? No, really? You're not asking me to do this after all? Here I was. I've already given him to you. It's already a done deal. And now you're saying, I don't have to? What's that noise? What's going on back there? A ram. A ram in a thicket?
How did he get there? What's going on here? God's given a substitute. Isaac, do you realize what God has just done? What is the ram in your provision? It can be anything. About a year and a half ago, we bought an air purifier. And it comes with filters. And I knew what would happen if I didn't buy extra filters right away. We'd get down the road, we'd need them, wouldn't have them, need to order them. So I just bought them right away. Well, it was very recently. It's been sitting there, inactive. It needs a filter. And, well, so you go looking for these filters. I looked high and low. I went upstairs, I went downstairs. Those filters weren't anywhere. I knew we had them. I knew we had them, but where? Judas suggested, well, just buy some more. Yeah. Logical thing to do. But I told her, I'm praying about it. We have them right here. We have them here. I know we do. Just don't know where. So I was praying about it. Day or two later, I'd gone to bed. I don't know why I was thinking about these filters, but I was. And the thought came to me, I know I saved the original box of the purifier. I know I have the box in the shop, and I'm sure the filters are in that box. I know they are. So I went to sleep. Next morning, I went to the shop, found the air purifier box. Sure enough, there they were. Thank you, God. I have no doubt that God gave me that thought. I had run to the end of my rope. I didn't know where else to look. That was a ram for me. I know God answered that. Within about 6 months of each other, 2 years ago, our second through fifth children all gave their hearts to the Lord. It's something we long for. It's something we pray for. For a couple of them, I thought it was high time. But I want it to be their decision. I don't want to push them into it. I want them to choose. Choose God. As parents, we don't want to be a stumbling block for them in that initial choice. And we don't want to be a stumbling block for them down the road. And I have begun to just connect with them individually. Is there anything? Do I in any way make it hard for you?
don't want to be a stumbling block to my children. And it is a joy to us when they come to that point of decision. We understand what John, the Apostle John, says when he says, "We experience no greater joy than to hear that our children walk in truth." We want our children to embrace our faith. There's no greater joy than when they do. We want them to take the torch of faith, the faith that they have seen working and developing, hopefully, in me, and to take it on, because I'm going to leave the scene. We want them to take it on farther, higher, bigger. Carry on the faith to the next generation. That's our desire. But finally, every generation must choose for themselves to carry it on. Children, behold how God provides. Let's live that before them. God is faithful. God is true. God is alive. And God will provide. Reach out and put your faith in Him. In closing, I just want to touch on God's promise then to Abraham, following the verses we've already read. Again, it's just another confirmation of God's promise that He has already given Abraham. Verses 15 to 18. "And the angel of the Lord called unto Abraham out of heaven the second time and said, By myself have I sworn, saith the Lord, for because thou hast done this thing and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and in multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is upon the seashore, and thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." God was not going to back down on his promise. And Abraham fulfilled his commitment in obedience to God. "Abraham, because of your obedience, I will bless." First Corinthians 15:58. "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord." That's obedience. "For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." May God bless you.